morning. I'm Susan. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Susan.
I'm so happy to be here. This meeting has really become my home in so many ways. I started coming to OA. My first meeting was August 2nd, 1966. It was 4 weeks before my 18th birthday. Makes me 67, so you don't have to add. And I didn't imagine when I came to OA that I would be here today. I don't think I could have imagined anything this far in advance when I was 18 years old anyway. But I came because my sister told me to, and I did what she told me in a lot of ways back in those days. And I remember everybody was really old, like 30. And, and most of the women there were married, and I didn't really relate in a lot of ways. But there must have been something that kept me coming back, because I kept coming back. It's hard to cover 49 years in 15 minutes, so you're not going to get a lot of my story. But I'll just say, you know, in the first 10 years of my being in OA, I got married, I had two children, I got divorced. And I did some growing. I struggled a lot with abstinence. I didn't realize at the time that I had an addiction to perfection as well as food. And really there was, you know, trying to do things perfectly gave me lots of good excuses to binge, is really what it was all about. So I had lots of good excuses, because if I couldn't do it perfectly the way it was written down on a piece of paper, and someone said you broke your abstinence, it was like, that was free, you know, okay, now I can have what I really want. My first husband, when I wanted to binge, I would buy foods he liked, you know, and we would binge together in certain ways. It was a very sick relationship, but that's another story altogether that I don't have time to go into. But I got my abstinence because I finally got that I didn't have to be perfect. And it was like, what I realized was that I was trying to build something positive on something negative. So I was trying to build success on failure. And I constantly felt like a failure. And as long as I felt like a failure, I just couldn't keep doing it. And this has happened to me a lot over the years, a one-night epiphany. I called a friend and said, I broke my abstinence again. And she said, aren't you sick and tired of starting over? And I don't know why that night that made a difference to me, but that night it made a difference to me. It was really a turning point for me. And, you know, after 10 years of starting over, and, you know, back in L.A. in those days, we raised our hands in our first 30 days of abstinence. It was constantly, you know. And I made a decision that I wasn't going to start over again. That was it. I was not going to start over again. And I always like to say that doesn't mean I gave myself free rein to eat anything I wanted whenever I wanted. That's not what that was about. It was really more about not having to be perfect. So I've had a lot of years of really perfectly imperfect abstinence. And, over the course of the years, gosh, it's so hard to figure out, like, what to talk about or what to focus on. I mean, my life is so different today than it was then. I was raising two young boys by myself. I didn't have the skills or the knowledge, you know, how to do that. I didn't have any role models. And I kept coming to meetings, and I kept asking for help. And I got the help I needed. And, you know, I like to, a lot of times, I haven't said this in a long time, because when my kids were growing up and into their early adulthood, I always used to say I judge my recovery based on my relationship with my children. Because it was 1976, when I met my husband in 1976, I was so overwhelmed with my life. I couldn't even see what was going on in so many ways. And I was still hitting my kids, yelling at them a lot, because I was in denial about how hard it was, so I was taking that out on them. And I remember the day I stopped hitting my kids. I remember the day I stopped yelling at my kids, and not perfectly, of course. the hitting was perfect. I never hit them again. But that was the beginning of my healing in so many ways in terms of this program. And you know, if I hadn't been coming here for as long as I had, even though at that point I wasn't in the abstinence I am now, I was ready to hear what I needed to hear in terms of that relationship. And one of the things I needed to hear and understand for myself was that putting my kids first was putting me first. As I remember someone saying to me, you have to put your children first. And I said, but if I do that, then I'll be last. I didn't know anything in between. You know, I was either going to be first or I was going to be last. And I finally got to understand that putting my children first was putting me first. And it's kind of like, you know, it's almost like that, the question, what's more important, abstinence or God? You know, it was that kind of a thing for me. I didn't know how to answer that question. So, you know, the relationships in my life to me are real good indicators of what's going on inside, what's going on with me. And, you know, relationship with a 16-year-old, oh, I don't even want to go there, that was really horrible. having teenagers wasn't so fun. But, you know, even the relationship with a 20-year-old is, you know, child, is way different than a relationship with a 45-year-old child. And it's funny because my kids live across the country. And I think what I do around that is I think I put myself in denial a lot about how hard that is for me to have my kids so far away. And I, you know, I've talked about this before. I don't know why I'm going there. I asked God to tell me whatever it was to say and let me say it. So here you go. You get what I got. I've always wanted a close family. I didn't have that growing up. You know, there were aunts and uncles and cousins, but we weren't close. And I always wanted a close family. And my family has just always been structured that way across the country, or just not, you know, emotionally close. And I was hoping I'd have that with my kids. And it's recreated my own childhood in so many ways, or my own adulthood, having my children so far away. And my grandchildren, you know, they're all 3,000 miles away. And it's painful for me, and I don't like that. I don't like the pain, you know. I'm sure none of you can relate to that, but I don't have to eat to numb the pain. I can find lots of other ways to do it. And I'm not even talking about compulsive behavior. Sometimes it's just denial. You know, it's just like, I'm just not going to go there. And it really came up for me this morning when I was talking to Curtis, and it just really came up for me this morning. And it is what it is. And I'm actually working on having closer relationships with my kids right now through the distance, because it doesn't have to be in person to have a close relationship. But I have to be the one that makes the effort, and I sometimes hear my mother's voice in my head, like she, you know, well, how come he never calls me? Like my son, he'd say, how come he never calls me? Well, that's just who he is. You know, if you want to talk to him, pick up the phone and call him. And I'm becoming that. I don't want to be that. I don't want to be that my mother was. And so if I'm trying to establish different ways of communicating, like, you know, I just sent my son a text a few, you know, whatever it was, and said, hi, just want you to know I'm thinking of you. Hope everything's going well. How are you? He sent me this long text back. It's like, oh, maybe that's a better way to communicate. You know, so there's just a lot of growing still and learning that's going on. And I didn't make a commitment to OA for life when I came in. I didn't make a commitment to OA for life 10 years after I came in. I don't think I ever consciously made a commitment to OA for life. But obviously, I have somewhere made that commitment. I came in with my mother. My sister was already in OA. She's the one that told me to come. Neither of them stayed. I'm the only one that stayed. And I think, you know, a lot of what I found here is the family that I wanted that I didn't have growing up. That's, you know, so we talk a lot about the fellowship. It's a very important part of what is going on here. What I've gotten from OA and what I've given to OA, I've said this before, I can't even imagine how my life would be if I hadn't been in OA. I just can't imagine. I've been married now for 35 years. I met my husband 40 years ago. Not the guy I would have chosen. I mean, he wasn't like, I didn't look at him across the room and say, ooh, I think I like him. I looked at him across the room and said, oh, he really plays the piano well. He was playing the piano at a OA talent show. And our relationship over the years is a miracle we're still together. It's just been such a struggle in so many ways. But I'm so glad I hung in there. I'm so glad I did my stuff. I took care of my work. I did, you know, what I needed to do. He's not in program, and that's fine. He does his own thing and finds his own, you know, spiritual path. That's one of the things that he and I are different on in terms of a spiritual path. And when we were first together and first living together, if someone called me a sponsee called me and I wanted to talk about God, I'd have to go into the other room because he was so judgmental. And that doesn't exist anymore. I know that my concept and belief in God is way different than his, and that's fine. I mean, that's what the program teaches us, right? We each get to pick our own concept of God. And so if he doesn't, you know, when I'm with his family, I'm surrounded by people whose concept of God is way different than mine. But I've developed a concept of a higher power by virtue of being in the program and the work that I've done in this program. And, you know, my God is my God. And I use the word God because most people know what you mean. I mean, I don't know what God is. I mean, I don't have some, you know, great definition of what God is. But I know what it is to me. And I know my God is my God. And my God's available to me whenever I want him to be. And if I don't want him to be, he just sits silently, quietly, waiting for me to come back. It's been like that over the years. And I can't imagine how my life would be without some kind of a spiritual basis for it. It's gotten me through so many things. Decisions that I've had to make, choices that I've had to make. And one of the things I learned about choices or decisions over the years was that there are no wrong ones. I remember a time thinking, okay, I can do this or I can do this. I do my best to make the choice that I believe that God wants for me. And if I find out later that it should have been that, that was what the lesson was. So there's a lesson to be learned any choice I make. So I don't have to like sweat it so much. I don't sweat it so much. You know, I do the writing I need to do, I talk to people, I make the best choice that I can, which is, I'm saying this because I'm about to have to make one of those choices in the next week, bless you. So, you know, I get to make the best choice that I can and trust that God will direct me in whatever direction is meant to be. And the confidence that I have today is something I never could have imagined that I would have, and I still have issues with low self-esteem. It's a core character defect of mine. But when I came into OA, the only thing I could have said nice about myself was I would be pretty if I'd lose some weight. That was about as nice as I could get about myself. But by doing the steps, by working with other people, by doing service, really particularly by doing service, I have learned...
That's is that 2 minutes?
Thanks. I have learned that I'm not stupid. I thought I was stupid. So then I found out I'm not stupid. I'm actually, and then I found out I was smart, which is a little different than not being stupid. And then I used to say I'm not educated. And then I found out I was educated. I just didn't do it in school. I mean, all of these things have, you know, and then I found out I had all these skills I had no idea I had. And the first time I ever had to speak in a meeting, I was shaking like this the whole time. Now it's like, oh, I'm the kind of person who likes attention. I like to be the center of attention. I used to do it in very negative ways. So I've learned that I can have be the center of attention in positive ways. And all of that was from doing service. You know, all of that was from, you know, being willing to say yes when someone asked, or raising my hand and trusting that God would give me the right, you know, if it was yes, it was the right thing. If it was no, it was the wrong thing. And I did so much service for so long that there was a period of time I didn't do any. And now it's like really important to me. It's a real cornerstone of my program to do service. So I'm trying to have at least one service position all the time. And And that means it's not the sponsoring service, it's the at a meeting or at the intergroup or whatever. You know, it's that kind of service is really important. And I think I must be talking about that because we're having elections today, right? But, you know, it's made me feel a part of it. You know, it showed me skills I didn't know I had. It's given me confidence that I couldn't have had any other way. So I feel like this was very disjointed, but I, you know, you get what you get, and this is who I am today and in so many ways, and there's so much more. I'm so grateful that my sister said to me, I found the answer and you have to go. That's what she said, I found the answer and you have to go. And I had no idea that she was telling me the truth. She did. She found the answer for me. And I'm so glad I came and that I didn't go away. Thank you.